morning. Welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Bob Larson, Bob Weber, and Dustin Pendell. Good morning, guys.
Hey, morning. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning.
Great to have everybody here, and we are going to discuss a couple things today. Really, we talked about some preconditioning techniques last week. We're going to talk about weaning and the actual process of weaning and how we can make that as smooth a transition as possible. We're also, Dustin's got some information for us to talk about the livestock risk protection tool. So if you're not familiar with that, that can be a good option for cow-calf producers. And we're going to discuss more about that weaning process. But before we get into that, I tell you what, it has been an interesting year. It's that time of year we approach weaning, but we've also, all of us have kids going back to school, and they have been very resilient in wearing those masks. And it's pretty impressive that they can make it through a school day, although some of our kids have said they have some mask-free time. But we're working through the process as best we can. And I think that's part of what when we talk about weaning or transitions, we have to be open to some changes, right? It may not go exactly as it did last year, which we could certainly say about this fall.
Yeah, weaning is such an important time from a health standpoint, as well as a productivity standpoint for these calves. And because, you know, we're an outdoor species, so live or cattle are raised outdoors. So weather, environmental conditions around the time of weaning, there's just so many things that make each year a little bit unique, a little bit different.
Yeah, you have to be adaptable, and that's one of the things. And there was an article coming out in the Angus Beef Bulletin that we put together, or I put together, on balance, and talking about the balance between matching your health program to both your geographic region and your disease challenge. And that's something, Bob, you and I have visited about before, that there is no one size fits all, I'm going to Google, look it up, and this is my health program. This is a great opportunity to work with your veterinarian, your extension agent, everybody around, to find out really some about your area and what fits best for you.
Yeah, I mean, in geographic area, especially when you think about the United States cattle raising areas, the amount of rainfall, typical winter temperatures, typical summer temperatures, all of those kind of things make several underlying risks. Because when we talk about health risk in cattle, you know, a few things that really rise to the top are things like parasites. And parasite loads are very different in Southeast United States versus upper high plains. And other risks, such as some of our blackleg or clostridial diseases, very different in different parts of the country. And so I really do agree with you that there aren't any one-size-fits-all types of health management plans for a herd, that it's going to vary geographically. And even herds that are close to each other geographically are still going to have some different risk factors. Do you bring in cattle? Do you bring in replacement heifers or stocker cattle, or are you a completely closed herd? Those are things that are going to impact the overarching health program for a herd.
All right. So before we go too far into weaning, I've got questions for you guys this morning, and we'll see how everybody does. And we'll see who can get the closest, because I've got some number questions, and then I've got some questions where I'm going to have you guess some characteristics. So the first one, according to the most recent NAMS, National Animal Health Monitoring System data, what is the average weaning weight of a calf in the United States?
Wow. So, but, you know, a lot of times people brag about those heavy ones, but you got some younger calves, you got some lighter calves. Heifers are going to be a bit lighter than the steer calves. I'm going to come in right around 530 pounds.
530. Dustin?
Yeah, I was going to go maybe a hair lighter than that. I was going to come in somewhere right around 498 pounds.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of places in the United States where that would be, you know, right around that 500 pounds would be pretty typical.
I'm going to say 5 1/4.
5 1/4. So 547.
Almost 550. Okay.
Yeah. Almost 550. How much has that weaning weight changed over the last 20 years?
Yeah. See, I'm going to cheat on this one, because I actually know. I've read several papers. There's some really good, a group out of Texas, a group out of North Dakota, have kept records on a on a set of ranches over many, many years and have some pretty good survey data. And what those articles say it is that it hasn't changed at all. So I'm going to say it's changed 0 pounds.
Weber?
I'm going to say plus five, but I think Larson's right.
Yeah, he is. It hasn't changed much, and it's not that the genetics haven't improved, but those calves are, we look at the influencers of weaning and weaning weight, a lot of that comes back to age. So I'll ask you, what's the average age of a weaned calf across all operations? So we're going to go back to the NOM study. What's the average age of a weaned calf?
Oh, well, you told me that the average weight was 500 pounds.
547.
So, 550.
198.
I'm going to do math here. Yeah.
So Dustin's got out his abacus. He's doing some calculations as well.
Yeah. I'm sliding the balls over. Okay. I'm going to say, you said 198?
Yep.
What you said, Weber? All right. I'm going to go on the other side of 200. I'm going to say 220.
220. All
220.
Right. Dustin?
I'm going to split the difference and go somewhere in the ballpark of 209.
209. Weber's got this one, 195.8. So about 6.5 months is the average age.
I was going to be in that 180 to 220 range would catch a lot of places.
Which means these calves are gaining, on top of 2 pounds a day.
Yeah, they're two and a quarter or so.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive for, you think about cows out on range and calves consuming that same range product. So
yep,
absolutely. Sure. From birth to weaning, about two and a quarter a day, 2.2. Yeah. So last question here, what's the most important factor? So when somebody's deciding when to wean their calves, what are the two most important factors? I'll have you guess two.
So this is survey data, right?
Yep, survey data.
I'm going to say range conditions.
Okay.
And age of calf.
Range and age. Weber?
I'm going to say age of calf, and we've always done it that way.
Yeah.
Tradition.
Tradition.
Now, that's not what I think is the most important. I think that's what the survey data says.
Yeah.
What does Pendle say?
I was going to say something along the lines of the tradition, convenience.
Market price, right? You're the economist.
It should be market price. Well, market forecast.
I would probably go somewhere with weight and maybe like the tradition.
Yeah. So you each got a piece of it. Age and weight are the top two in the response to the survey. And I would lean heavily towards what Dustin, what you and Bob said, tradition, time of year, right? So we do it this time, and maybe that decision was made at one point in time. And this is a decision that often doesn't get reevaluated every year. When should we wean the calves? But maybe it should, because Larson, your other point, range conditions should play a big role, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to wean a little bit earlier, and even a few weeks can make a difference on the cows, and it can make a difference on your marketing plan. So let's talk about how we do it. Let's talk about weaning and some of the methods that can make that. And what I want is a smooth transition. I want to move from having calves on the cow to having calves that are ready to move to their next phase of life with as little problems for me and the calves as possible. So how do I do that?
Well, I liked your idea of reevaluate how you've done it in the past, in that, so what I'm picturing weaning day, whether we're doing some of the work on horseback or on foot, do I have the right people there? Maybe Uncle Joe that helped last year actually wasn't all that much help. Maybe we could send him to town for parts or something. So reevaluate how things have gone well in the past or not, or we didn't remember that gate was broken until we were, the calves were to the pen and now we're dragging a gate around. So reevaluate how things went well last year and what things probably need to be changed for this year. And so I'm thinking facilities and labor would be two really high ones on my list is, do I have enough labor? Do I have the right labor? Are the facilities ready?
So I've got a gate, Bob, and I appreciate what you're saying, because I've got a gate that is actually one of the gates to use as a kind of a crowd gate. And it's off the hinge. I can see it's off the hinge. I haven't used it in a while. I'm watching it. Do you know when I'm afraid that I will decide to fix that? Is when we're ready to use it.
When there's cattle in the pen already.
Right? Yeah. That seems like the wrong time. So I think you're absolutely right. Do a walkthrough of the facilities. Make sure everything is looking good. And I've got them prepared. And Weber, you mentioned that too, as far as getting the facilities prepared. Sometimes it means I've got a pen or a place I'm going to put those calves that has been sitting empty for a little bit of time this summer, and it may not be in ideal condition.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. My family and I went on a little camping trip here a couple of weeks ago down at Council Grove, and we were driving back, and there's a couple of sets of pens with some J-bunk kind of right along 177 south of Manhattan. And there's a couple of guys that you could tell they were getting ready to do some weaning stuff. They were walking the pens. They had a mower out, brush hogging the pigweed and stuff out of those weaning pens and getting ready. And it sort of struck a chord with me that, you know, that kind of work versus, you know, well, we'll just turn the calves in. They'll trample the weeds down. Well, they may do that, but maybe not the best for eyes and intake and behavior, but having those pens cleaned up. And the other thing they were doing is checking fence, checking the bunk, make sure it was cleaned out, checking the water, all that stuff.
And, checking the bunk and the water, but those calves are going to test the fence in places, you know, so they're going to be looking for places they can crawl under or get through. And so a good set of eyes to avoid those problems later.
Yeah. But you talk about bunk and water. Give me, if we're putting them in a pen, and they have been out on pasture, and let's take a scenario, they're drinking out of a pond or a creek mostly, or getting milk from their mother, and then I put them in a pen. How do I get those calves to figure out what the water is and how that works? You got any ideas there?
Well, I think one of the really key things, if you've got, you know, frost-free waters with some kind of lid cover, ball, whatever, either take those off or make sure they're in the open surface position, so at least they can as they go by, smell and see, and see other animals drinking, because some of them won't figure it out. If the ball's up or the lid's down, some of them won't figure out how to consume out of those, particularly if they've been only in sort of a pasture or surface water environment. So
yep. Well, another thing to think about from that water is make sure that they can really get to the water. Because we were just saying earlier, you know, the average age of these calves is around 200 days. So some of them are going to be younger than that. And some of them are going to be fairly light and just not very tall. And so particularly if, again, you've got waters that are really designed for cows or older calves. And then if kind of dirt has been pulled away from that, you know, so that it's actually even higher from where they're going to stand, you get to the situation where it's quite difficult for those shorter calves to reach the water. So I would double check to make sure that you really can. And during this weaning time, you may actually even have to bring in another water tank, you know, instead of using my frost-free water fountain or something like that, bring in a tank with a lower height. And maybe a little bit easier for them to get. Yeah, make it easy for them to get water. Water is the most important nutrient, and you got to make sure they get that.
And you're not going to have too much water in the pen during this phase. So
it's not on the ground.
As long as it's not on the ground. But if you put in, I think it's a great idea, put in another tank, and the height of the animals is critical to consider. So if you put in a big 100-gallon stock tank, those can be pretty tall, especially if there's been mud around it and it's been tromped down. So be sure that they can get to it. Now let's talk about the weaning method. And there's a couple big approaches. And Bob, I know in the past you have talked some about low stress weaning. What are some of the advantages there, and what makes it different than what I would call typical or traditional weaning?
Well, some of the descriptions that are out there, and this started a number of years ago, was again trying to lower the weaning stresses associated with that time frame. And so one of them is a change in diet, the change from milk as part of the diet to no milk. Some of it is just physical presence of them, of the dam, of the cow. And so the idea developed over some time where you would actually physically separate the calf from the cow so that he can no longer suckle, but she's still present. So basically just across the other side of a fence, and that might be a five wire fence or just electric fence or something. And so when I say an electric fence, it may not be 100% effective at keeping the calf away, but most of the time so that, that you've started that weaning process. And you do that for several days, let the calf kind of get used to not being around the cow and the cow used to not being around the calf. And then after that physical separation where they've kind of broken that maternal calf bond, then you actually change their diet and do some other things. So it's several steps over several days. Leave them on grass, leave them on the diet that they're used to while you're making that maternal separation. And then after that's done, completed, then you change the diet and change their location and things like that.
Absolutely. And I think those are some good comparisons. So which one, what do you recommend? Which one would you do? And I'll ask Weber first, which one would you recommend, Bob?
Well, I like the fence line weaning method fairly well. Obviously, multi-strand electric fence works really well, particularly if the calves have been in a pasture environment where they've already experienced electric fence and already respect it. That's pretty effective method. We here at the house, we've got just a few cows, and so our grazing situation is a little different than a lot of folks. But we actually use the little nose flap easy wean nose plug things and put those in calves, and they seem to work really well. The calf by about a week, it's funny to watch them follow their dam around. They'll still follow the cow around, but they don't get real close because those cows get pretty good at whacking them when they get.
So everybody may not be familiar with those. So say again what it's the, so it's the nose
plug. It's a little nose plug, plastic typically, goes in the nose of the calf, and it's got little points on the end of it that basically poke the cow. And so she discourages the calf from suckling. The calves can still go out and graze and eat, and it's unobstructive that way. But seems to work pretty good, at least on our cows. So
yeah, it helps make that
probably tomorrow. So
it helps make that transition just a little bit easier because they're already not on those cows. And I think one of the key things that we would say is match what you can do, whether it's low stress or it's traditional, with your resources, time, and what works best for your operation. Just like we started this conversation, it's not a one size fits all. And that leads us to our BCI Cattle Chat checklist for this week, which are our top four tips for managing the weaning transition.
Number four, be flexible on the weaning date.
Number three, prepare your facilities appropriately. Make sure they're in good shape for pens and waters and bunks, and be ready for those calves to hit the pens.
Number two, clean the water and make sure the calves have easy access to feed.
And number one, match your specific weaning plan to your resources.
And that's our BCI Cattle Chat checklist for this week. Dustin, we've talked about weaning, but now we also want to address some of the, one of the reasons we're weaning is so we can sell those calves. And it may not be perfect for this year, but I think it's worth talking. A few episodes ago, we talked about different types of risk and how to protect from that risk. One of the programs that we wanted to talk about today is the Livestock Risk Protection Tool or Livestock Risk Protection Program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the Livestock Risk Protection, which is commonly referred to as LRP, it is an insurance product, so it is a risk management tool. It's offered through the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture's Risk Management Agency. And this LRP policy protects producers from adverse price changes in the underlying livestock market. And so now this policy, it does not cover from other perils such as diseases or death. It is just for the underlying livestock market price. This is for feeder calves. They also have products for fed cattle, I believe. also for lamb and swine. And as we said, as I mentioned, it's really designed to insure against the declining market prices. What's nice about it is you can choose from a variety of coverage levels. I believe anywhere from 70 to 100% of the actual ending value. It also allows you to pick from different insurance time periods. And that's nice because it allows you to match your when your feeder cattle would normally be marketed. But again, this is just one form of risk management. There's a lot of other options out there that we've talked about in the past, whether that be futures markets, forward contracts, et cetera.
So from a cow-calf, what are some of the things, if I was going to do this as a cow-calf producer, what are some of the advantages or disadvantages of going this way versus some of the other options that are out there?
I guess one advantage, maybe thinking the futures market, we talked about before the show started, was the contracts are already set. I believe feeder cattle are 50,000-pound contracts,
yeah.
Whereas with LRP, if you want to buy 10 head, you buy 10 head. They put a max. You can do up to 2,000 animals, 2,000 head per year. So that's one nice advantage. The other nice advantage is it allows you to pick different lengths of time to your contracts. So that which allows you for your marketing, you can pick different weight ranges. I think under 600 pounds or over 600, between 600 and 900. And so those are just a couple, I guess, of the maybe some advantages of LRP.
It seems to me also, this may be true for other price risk management tools as well, but I've got a lot of flexibility to match my level of risk aversion. So if I'm really risk averse, I can purchase at a level that's going to be more expensive, but it's going to kick in quicker. If I'm willing to take a little more risk, it allows, so me and my brother-in-law and my cousin down the road, we can all use this tool, but we may use it pretty differently.
Well, Andrew, I think the contract thing is a big thing too, because your contract size is on a per head basis instead of a truckload size lot.
That's one. Another thing that I forgot, one benefit, I guess, could be is some of those premium subsidies. The premium subsidy that you would pay for it is being part of it is being subsidized by USDA. So that would be another benefit. And they actually just upped some of those premium subsidies back starting in July of this year.
Excellent. So, Weber, have you had anybody that's used this or any familiarity with this type of tool?
Yeah, so we've got a number of programs that we've done through our beef extension team over time that's talked about LRP, and there's certainly some producers out there that do it. I think one of the real challenges is sometimes just wading through the program and understanding exactly how it works. There's some other products out in the market as well. I know my folks use a forage production model product to ensure grass production on our ranch in Colorado, and I've had pretty good luck with that. So it's a little different model there. They take in cash rent pasture cattle and use the forage production is basically what they're trying to ensure, because no grass, no cows, right? So they're not the ones marketing calves, but they have to basically ensure forage production to protect that cash flow. So there's some really interesting products out there, and if you've got just a few cows, you kind of don't spend a lot of time focused on those risk management, but certainly as you grow in size, the importance of those, particularly to avoid some kind of catastrophic event that not just you don't just lose money, it takes you out of business, is really important. So
in risk management, one of the advantages is it doesn't it's not going to protect you from everything, but it does allow you to lower the level of uncertainty of what's going to happen and may let you expand a little bit. And I think if you haven't looked in a while, and these LRP tools have been around a little bit, Dustin mentioned there's been some changes recently. If you haven't evaluated those, talk to somebody, look them up. I certainly think they're worth looking into, and they provide some options for some cow-calf folks.
And just one final thing, Brad, bring this up. If people are interested in learning more about it, or you might want to go out and visit the USDA Risk Management Agency's website, and they've got a list of all the approved insurance, livestock insurance agents on their website. They also list the premium rates, the coverage prices, the actual ending values. That's posted, and that's updated on a daily basis. And so we'll have that in our show notes.
Excellent. Thanks, Dustin. Appreciate that. And I think that'll be a really good tool for some of the folks looking in to evaluate that. And we've enjoyed having you with us today. If you have questions, comments, anything you'd like us to talk about on the show, we really enjoy getting those and visiting with you when we see you out and about. But you can always send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.